for argument this morning is number 12-18-16, and it's Norum versus Lincoln Benefit Life. And good morning, Mr. Steve. And am I pronouncing that properly?
Very close, Your Honor. It's Patrick Stevie. It's a tricky German name.
UE is pronounced E in German, isn't it?
Yes.
Steve.
Yeah, well, you know, actually, through the Internet, we found out that the Germans, because it's spelled with an umlaut, it's pronounced Stuva.
Stuva.
Yeah, Stuva.
Mm-hmm.
Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Patrick Stevie, and I'm here on behalf of the plaintiff, appellant, Dr. Norum. Dr. Norum is requesting that this court reverse the trial court's order granting summary judgment in favor of Lincoln Benefit Life because the trial court's order is contrary to the plain meaning of the policy at issue, is contrary to well-established principles of contract construction, as well as contrary to a number of cases that have applied similar language and concluded, consistent with Dr. Norum, that there are two limitations in the cost of insurance provision. One is the based on language, and the second one is the cap.
You know, presumably, your policy included the guaranteed COI rates, which you concede have always been observed, right?
They've never charged a rate that exceeds the cap.
Right.
But
so what I've been trying to figure out is what breach of contract can you establish when you've never been charged rates above the guaranteed COI rate? In other words, the only explicit promise in the policy is that your rate will never be above the guaranteed rate. Or am I wrong about that?
You're wrong, Honor. There are actually two limitations. I think this is the significant issue that we're presenting to the courts, a question of law. The cases that we cite in Ray Canseco, U1, U2, Jeans, they all contained based on language just like we have here, and they all contained guaranteed maximum caps. None of those courts found that the insurance company could ignore the based on language and charge anything they wanted up to the cap. And so what we're saying is, if you look at on page 12 of the policy, and that's document 13, exhibit 1, pages 11 through 12, the policy says, it first identifies several specific premium deduction charges, including the cost of insurance rate. And then it gives a detailed formula with respect to the rate, and it says, multiply the results by the current cost of insurance rate divided by 1,000. The cost of insurance rate is based on the insured's sex, issue age, policy year, and payment class. That is the limitation that the district court has completely read out.
Well, is there a way to tell what Is there a way to tell what percentage of the COA rate is comprised of all those things you just noted, the insured's sex, age, you know, policy or whatever, and what percentage is comprised of the loads that you are contesting?
Yes, there were documents that were produced that confirm that Lincoln Benefit Life calculated a mortality rate for given classes, and then they loaded on top of that these non-mortality factors. And it's the difference between the cost of insurance rate with the loads and the mortality rate that should have formed the basis for the cost of insurance rate that forms our damages. And it is exactly what is at issue in these other cases where the insurance company is trying to increase the rate. It's not exceeding the maximum in any of those cases. What the courts have found in all those cases is, wait a minute, your ability to charge a cost of insurance rate is limited by the based on language.
So hypothetically, if 99% of the COI rate would be determined using the specified factors, would there still be a breach of contract?
Well, That is not, in fact, the case here. First of all,
I'm not asking you that.
I still believe that there would be a breach. There would just be very minimal damages here. But we have evidence that a substantial, for example, in 2009, well over 50% of the cost of insurance rate assessed to Dr. Norum was for these non-mortality factors. And this is really important because you can't ignore that limitation, because that limitation substantially reduces the cash value of these policies. And what that means is that over time, it reduces your ability to pay the premiums off. Let me give you an example. Dr. Norum, which is very typical for these policies, paid a substantial premium up front. The idea is that's supposed to pay for the cost of the insurance during his lifetime. When you inflate the cost of insurance rate, that decreases the cash value, which then is going to require him to start making premium payments, likely when he's retired, when he's in the least position to do so.
But have you actually done the calculations to see what kind of pecuniary harm he allegedly suffers under your proposed reading of the proper calculation of the COI rate?
Where we were in discovery, because remember, Lincoln Benefit Life moved for summary judgment even before we sought class certification. Where we were in discovery is we have direct evidence that they substantially inflated the cost for insurance rate with these non-mortality factors. And we have, and we cited in the trial court specific examples, for example, 2009 with respect to Dr. Norum, that well over 50% of his cost of insurance rate was for non-mortality factors. So we will do a calculation of damages, and that will be the difference between the cost of insurance rate assessed with the loans.
But you have not done it.
Well, because they moved for summary judgment, and the court granted summary judgment on the contract language. So discovery was not even complete. We haven't even had class certification decided at that point.
Are you saying that – I don't want to put words in your mouth. Are you saying that you have no idea of the damages here?
No. What I'm saying is our damages is the difference between – the cost of insurance rate assessed against Dr. Norum with the loads in it and the cost of insurance rate if they'd used the mortality factors as represented in the contract. That difference is his damages.
But have you any idea of what that might be?
Well, we do. We have an estimate with respect to Dr. Norum, and we're talking about well over $10,000 in reduction of the cash value. But we did not submit a damage calculation for Dr. Norum in opposition to the summary judgment, because that was not an issue at that time, whether or not we could prove damages. Lincoln Benefit Life has conceded that they loaded these non-mortality factors into Dr. Norum's cost of insurance rate. Their only defense to this case is that the maximum guarantee is the only limitation that's been placed on them. And that completely ignores the second sentence in the cost of insurance rate that specifically says that the cost of insurance rate is based on the insured's sex, issue age, policy year, and payment class. Those are the classic mortality factors. When all of us seek insurance, what do they want to know? They want to know our age. They want to know our sex. They want us to disclose our health condition, because that's the premium payment class, whether you're preferred, which is what Dr. Norum was, or a smoker or a non-smoker. Now, Lincoln Benefit Life says, well, that is a tortuous interpretation of the contract. It's unreasonable. We cited to the trial court, and we cite to you, the prospectus that Lincoln Benefit Life gave to Dr. Norum at the time they issued the policy specifically says, and this is document 88-6, page 21, the cost of insurance rate is based on the sex, issue age, policy year, and premium rating class of the insured. The cost of insurance charge covers our anticipated mortality costs for the standard and substandard risks. Although we will base the current cost of insurance on our expectations as to future mortality experience, that rate will never exceed the maximum cost. So there are two limitations. There are two statements that they make. Number one, that they're going to base the cost of insurance rate on mortality. The four factors are specifically defined, and under no circumstances will it be greater than the cap. So the point is that even if we're using the mortality factors and that rate exceeds the max, we're only going to charge you the max. This is no different than in, for example, credit cards, where you're told that you've got a rate, a variable rate, but there's a statutory cap. Under no circumstances are we going to charge you more than 25%. If you read in Ray Canseco, if you read U1, U2, all of those cases involved the same based on limitation, and also they all included a guaranteed max. And none of those courts said, it's okay, you can add non-mortality factors because you haven't exceeded the cap. Now, I would also point out the Third Circuit. That's also interpreted a based on language for the premium rate in that case. The insurance company took the position that based on, followed by age and sex, means that the only mortality factors that could be considered were age and sex. The insured said you should have also included the payment, my payment class, i.e. non-smoker, and the Third Circuit said no, based on means what it says. There were two mortality factors identified, and you are limited to only those two factors. That case, the Third Circuit case, directly supports our interpretation here. I notice that I'm into my rebuttal time, so I will.
If you can. Thank you. Okay, Mr. Gilbert. Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Counsel. Dr. Norum bought his $900,000 life insurance policy in 1994 from his agent based on an illustration showing the policy's performance under the COI rate scale that was then in effect. That's the same rate scale that is in effect today. He still has the policy over 15 years later. It's almost 20 years at this point.
Is the guaranteed COA rate included in the policy based exclusively on the sex, policy year, issue, age, whatever?
No, it is not, actually. The as the record shows, the guaranteed rate, it's primarily based on those mortality-type characteristics, just like the COI rate in the policy is primarily based on those COI, on those mortality characteristics.
So guaranteed.
The guaranteed rate is not solely based on those characteristics. The record shows that those guaranteed rates, which come from a mortality table that's published generally for actuaries, also have a load in them, and that's in the record. It's not a huge load, but there is a load in them.
So presumably Illinois regulators who approved the language would be aware that the actual COI rate calculation included factors other than those listed in the policy?
Yes. That is the general way that COI rates are calculated for life insurance policies.
It's so mysterious.
The pricing of life insurance policies is often mysterious. Understand that. There are actuaries who perform that.
It's generally the way it's done, but we're arguing about this contract here, aren't we?
Exactly, Your Honor. I'd like to turn, and in this contract, Dr. Norum's entire suit is based upon that one sentence. That's a sentence that describes for the policyholder the primary characteristics that are the foundation for the cost of insurance rate, and is telling the policyholder how that cost of insurance rate is going to vary for different individuals. For instance, if somebody's a male or a female, you're going to have different rates, depending on the age you were at when you purchased your policy, depending on how long you've had your policy, depending on your classification. It's going to vary. So this sentence is telling that to the policyholders. And it's important to have that in there. For instance, if you look at the guaranteed rates on page 5 of the policy, those are not distinct. The only distinction there is the policy year, the number of years for that guaranteed maximum. So if a policyholder is going to be looking at that policy, and just look at that guaranteed rate, they're not going to know that the cost of insurance rates for them are going to differ based on other characteristics as well. And those are the primary ones.
Yeah,
now, the other...
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, this is... Can you be at all specific about why Dr. Norm's reading of the policy would amount to corporate suicide for you?
I'm sorry? Oh, why?
Yeah.
Yeah. The record below is that there's no question in this case, it's undisputed, that Lincoln Benefit Life calculated the cost of insurance rates and the other charges in the policy to cover their expenses and make a profit, like any company would do. And in fact, particularly life insurance companies should be profitable because, as Dr. Norum himself testified, he wanted to purchase his policy from a company that was financially strong that would be there to pay the death benefit, the $900,000 face amount of his policy, when he died. And there's no question that was done here, and that's how this was calculated. A couple things. There was some discussion about the 50% of the cost of insurance rate in 2009 was for non-mortality factors. I have never seen anything in the record to that effect. The court didn't rely on it. There was nothing in the record that I'm aware of to that effect. What is in the record is the testimony of the company in a 30B6 deposition that mortality, that is the primary component in the cost of insurance rates. And I can give you the citation to that, which is it's document number 66-23, and it's page 6 of 12. This is the deposition of Dean Way, who is an actuary, the pricing actuary from Lincoln Benefit Life. And it's deposition page 106, lines 10 to 12, and that's in the record. And he says, when he's asked, you know, given all these various factors, how is mortality is it an important part of what's going on? And he said the mortality is the primary component in the calculation of the COI rate. Another record problem that I need to point out is counsel mentions the prospectus. Now, the prospectus is not part of the policy. I think it's inappropriate for plaintiff to be bringing extrinsic evidence before the court because the court below found for the company based on the policy language itself, and under Illinois law, extrinsic evidence is not supposed to be considered until there's an ambiguity found under the air safety case and the TAS case from this court. But nevertheless, as long as they brought the prospectus before the court, first of all, the prospectus that they cited to, document 88, is not the prospectus that Dr. Norum received when he purchased the policy. That's a 2002 prospectus. The actual prospectus he received, which is also in the record, if you wish to see that, though it's not necessary for the decision, is it's document 137-5.
137-5.
And it's Exhibit D to Lincoln Benefit's response to the plaintiff's amended Local Rule 56.1 Statement of Facts.
Rule 56.
It's
So let me just get this straight. So did this, for want of a better term, illustration that was prepared for the doctor when he purchased his policy, did that actually set forth all the different factors that Lincoln Benefit uses when it calculates the COI rate?
It does not. Illustrations are mandated by the Department of Insurance.
Yeah.
And given the complexity of pricing of an insurance policy and the number of factors that are considered, what the Department of Insurance requires when an agent or a company sells a product like this is an illustration that shows the performance of the product in the future based on different cost of insurance rates. So the illustration he received, and that illustration is in the record, showed what the performance would be under the current cost of insurance rate then, which is the one that still applies, and what it would be under the guaranteed rate, the maximum rate, that is the limitation on what the company can charge. And it's the judgment of the insurance departments that that's more meaningful to a purchaser than trying to give them some actuarial numbers that actually are the average layperson is not going to be able to understand. The key here is that this based on sentence has no limiting language. When we look at the contract itself, the limiting language in the contract is in the next sentence, that says the rates will be determined by us, by the company, but they will never be more than the guaranteed rates. That's limiting language. If the prior sentence just says based on, and as the district court, as Judge Reinhardt got it right, based on does not mean limited to. Based on means it's a primary factor, it's the fundament, it's the basis of. It's not exclusively based on, solely based on. That's not the language of this policy. And they're trying to read that language into this policy.
And what you, I take it, are arguing, well, I know that you're arguing that if based on were meant to mean exclusively based on,
they would have
that
said,
would have said.
They would have,
they
said,
would
that.
Have said it.
They've said, and there's no dispute in this case.
I mean, your entire argument pretty much boils down to that.
Yes, it does.
You can sit down, can't you? No. A joke.
I enjoy being up before Your Honor. What can I say?
How do you handle the Lee case, then, which is very emphasized by the plaintiffs?
The Lee case has several elements to it that make it. First of all, there's no holding in the Lee case interpreting that language. The Lee case is only a class certification decision by the Illinois Appellate Court. And the court only was faced with the issue of whether there's an ambiguity or not that would require some extrinsic evidence to be admitted, which would perhaps make it impossible to have a class action, because you'd have to have extrinsic evidence with regard to every single policyholder to know what their agent told them or what they understood when they purchased their policy, what information they received over the life of their policy, et cetera. That's what the defendant in that case was trying to say. Well, it came out that in that case, both the plaintiff and the defendant said that the language was unambiguous. And the Illinois Appellate Court said, based on that, we're going to find it's unambiguous. No one's contending otherwise.
Well, aren't you saying that in this case, too? You both agree that the language, there's no ambiguity in this contract.
Well, we don't believe it's ambiguous. And we think, as the district court did, based on the plain language, you can rule our way. I question whether the plaintiff's position, because they submitted extrinsic evidence to support their position, for instance, internal documents of our client. If they need to submit that extrinsic evidence, that seems to suggest that they may believe there's an ambiguity there. I don't know. But our position is that it is unambiguous, and Your Honors, of course, have to make that determination yourself. Just because both sides may say it's unambiguous is not a reason to consider it unambiguous. And I would say we don't think it is ambiguous, but if you were to determine it's ambiguous, it would be necessary to remand this case to the district court, because the district court made no determinations based on extrinsic evidence. There's no record on that, even though there's some elements of extrinsic evidence that have been presented in the course of the summary judgment and the appeal. That issue has not been decided by the district court.
So did the district court take into consideration the extrinsic evidence or not?
According to its opinion, no. According to its opinion, and according to our motion, which was just based solely on the language of the contract and applying reasonable interpretation standards that the courts apply, such as you interpret a contract to make sense. There's nothing in here that says that you're supposed to, how you could come up with a cost of insurance rate based on those four factors alone without considering other formulas and numbers and bases. And two, you have to come up with a contract that makes reasonable from a commercial point of view. And getting back to your prior question, Judge Rovner, the record is undisputed that under this contract as written, Lincoln Medical Life would lose money if it could not include what they call the loads in the cost of insurance rate. Their only response to that was to say, well, they had an expert who said you could have designed a different contract that had cost of insurance based solely on what your expectations were as to mortality. And while that may be true, that has nothing to do with the contract that's before us here. I really like the analogy we included in our brief. This is really no different than somebody going to a post office and the post office saying, you know, somebody says, how much is it going to cost me to send this package? And the post office says, well, you tell me what the destination, your price is going to be based on the destination, the weight, and the size of the package. Now, anybody going to the post office in that situation is not going to believe that the only basis for the charges is going to be the weight and the destination and the size, but they're going to understand that the post office is going to try to cover other expenses through the charge and is also going to try to make a profit to the extent that the post office can make a profit or at least have increased revenues as a result.
They haven't been very successful.
I believe they are, yes. Understood. Just a couple more points. In terms of the other cases that they've mentioned, they don't support the interpretation. All those cases that they rely on, the U case, the In re Canseco case, I think there are two U cases, the Jeans case, they all involved situations where there was an increase in the cost of insurance rate during the life of the policy. Not like this case, where the same cost of insurance rate that Dr. Norum saw in that illustration, it was the basis for the illustration when he purchased his policy, has stayed the same throughout the course of the life of the policy. In those cases, what happened is that companies were increasing the cost of insurance rates, and the plaintiffs were saying, wait a minute, your cost of insurance rate is supposed to be based on mortality. And mortality rates have gone down, which is just a fact. People are living longer these days than they did for policies that were in place 20, 25 years ago. So you are not following your policy and increasing rates for reasons other than mortality. And that's not what we have here. There's no question here that the COI rate is primarily based on mortality. It's just a question of this little bit of a load. Those are very different cases, and the language in some of those cases is different. You and James actually say that the COI rate is to be based on its expectation of future mortality experience, which is not language that is in this policy here. Your Honor, unless you have other questions, we believe the court should affirm the district court's summary judgment ruling and stand our briefs, and I'll sit down at this point.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
How many minutes?
4 minutes.
I would simply ask the court to look at Allman and Ray Canseco, U1, U2, and Jeans. They all have the same based on limitation they use. They say mortality factors. Here it's more specific. It spells out the four. None of those courts found that it was necessary to read in the word exclusively to require the insurance company to base the cost of insurance rate on the factors that were listed.
But truly, you would concede that if based on were meant to mean exclusively based on, it would have been easy to say that.
Well,
it bothers me.
Well, let me respond to that. The reason why it's not necessary is because based on followed by the object, a reasonable layperson is going to understand that to mean that the rate is based on the specific factors enumerated. If Lincoln Benefit Life, here they're the drafters, if they wanted to include a bunch of non-mortality loads like they've done, as numerous of these courts have said, they should have said so. But a reasonable interpretation of what that language means is this: that's what they're going to base the rate on. And in fact, the reason why we cite the prospectus is not to introduce extraneous evidence, it's to confirm that Dr. Norm's interpretation is a reasonable one. That's the interpretation that Lincoln Benefit Life gave to it before they were sued. And now that they've been sued, I'm sorry, Judge.
No, I'm sorry.
I didn't mean.
No.
So my point is, let's look at the interpretation they gave to it, which confirms that Dr. Norm's interpretation is a reasonable one. And again, Dr. Norm's interpretation is also supported by all these cases that we cite in there, including the Third Circuit, the Southern District of Iowa. The second thing I'd like to point out is they're the ones that cite to this illustration. It's very misleading. I'd ask the court to look at the illustration. It does not disclose the cost of insurance rate. So an insured would not know by looking at the illustration that they had loaded a number of non-mortality expenses that they set out in their explicitly state have these limitations, and those are on page 11. There's no disclosure that they're going to double dip, and a reasonable insured would not know that. The rate is never disclosed in the policy, the illustrations, or the premium statements or annual statements that they give. The only understanding that a layperson has with respect to the cost of insurance rate is the explicit statement that this rate will be based on your age, sex, payment class, which is your health, and the age of issue. even if there were an ambiguity here, and I asked the court to read the most recent case, In re Conseco, they said even if there's an ambiguity here, we're going to construe it as we should against the insurance company who drafted the policy. Now, this corporate suicide, they say that the record is undisputed. The only evidence that they have is a corporate representative that says we're going to lose money if we interpret it this way. We dispute that. But it certainly, I mean, we're not even through merits discovery. It wasn't the basis of the trial court's opinion here. And if they're going to stand up and they're going to rest their defense on corporate suicide, we're entitled to full discovery on that, not a summary judgment ruling prior to even the determination of class certification. But it's not uncontroverted. It's their conclusory allegation is unsupported. I'd also direct the court to In re Conseco because it's the most recent and I think very thorough analysis that when you're saying based on, it is primary, it's fundamental, and we will be able to produce evidence that it's not a little bitty increase.
Is that Iowa case?
No.
No.
The In re Conseco, the Iowa case is the Jeans decision. We've got a Southern District of Iowa. We've got the Third Circuit, who makes it very clear that the based on means what it says. They didn't have to write in exclusively. They told the insured that based on followed by the two mortality factors means what it says, which is those two factors. We would ask that the court reverse the trial court's entry of summary judgment and remand this case back down to state court for further proceedings. We appreciate your time.
Thank you so very much. Thanks to one and all, and the case will, like every other case here, be taken under advisement.